Hello, and welcome to the podcast edition of Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, your source for news, reviews, previews, and interviews with baseball writers and authors, artists and musicians, filmmakers, basically anyone who has anything to do with baseball and pop culture. Because that's our slogan, if it fits on a bookshelf, it fits here. Who doesn't like pretty things? Museums such as the Baseball Hall of Fame are filled with them, but not everyone can get up to Cooperstown. For them, there are books like A History of Baseball in 100 Objects by Josh Leventhal. Leventhal, whose previous books on baseball include The World Series, an illustrated encyclopedia of the Fall Classic, and Baseball Yesterday and Today, among other handsome coffee table editions, has collected an assortment, kind of like a box of chocolates. As he explains in our conversation, they run the gamut from documents to balls, bats, and gloves, to trophies, to ticket stubs and programs, and beyond. A short and sweet introduction today, so let's get on with the chat.
Josh Leventhal, welcome to the Baseball Bookshelf.
Oh, thanks very much for having me.
So, A History of Baseball in 100 Objects. What was your criteria for inclusion in this book?
Well, the way I really approached it was thinking about the history of the game and what are the 100 pivotal moments or people or teams that kind of defined the sport through each era. And then I would explore that a little bit further and see what kinds of objects I could find to represent, to kind of lead into the story. So it's not really a book about objects per se. This again is a history of the sport, and so I would, for just one example, think, okay, Ty Cobb is a pivotal player of the dead ball era. What are some things that I can find that demonstrate his talents, his abilities, or kind of what he meant to the sport? And then from there, talk about his career and what the game was like at that time.
So it's not even just a question of finding 100 objects. If you find a player like a Cobb or a Babe Ruth, out of all the objects that you could have selected from them, how do you narrow down just one or a couple, if you have a couple for each person?
Right, it was tricky. I mean, sometimes it was a question just of availability and what I could get nice images of, but I also wanted to include a variety of objects as much as possible, or something that's a little bit off the beaten path. I could have found a baseball bat or a ball or a glove for pretty much anybody to talk about. But with, you know, Babe Ruth, for example, there was a home run, a literal crown trophy that he received from his team when he won the home run title in 1921. So that was kind of a little bit of a different way of introducing the subject of Babe Ruth. And it was an interesting object. It's not the kind of thing that you're going to see widely or you know, in other books and so on. And the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown was a great resource for, obviously, the objects and the images in their files and their archives.
So I was going to ask how you go about actually finding these items. What's the chicken and egg? Where do you start?
The Hall of Fame was definitely my first stop. I would be in constant contact with particular photo archives because they have a pretty rich collection of material that's already been photographed and is already available. So I'd write to them or call them and say, hey, you know, what do you have for Babe Ruth, or what do you have for Sandy Koufax, or whatever it may be. So that was kind of where I started. And then I started to dig a little bit deeper. The Library of Congress has some, particularly for the early years, in the 19th century, they've got some interesting documents and illustrations that were a way for me to tell that kind of prehistory of the game and the origins of the sport. And I also was able to find some things kind of indirectly from private collections by going to some auction houses that would, you know, get these objects from people and sell them, and they had images of World Series rings and signed balls and hats and those kinds of things. So I went through a few different channels. It was certainly a big part of the process, was trying to locate and see what's out there and find them. And certainly if I had more time, it would have been even more exciting to go to, again, these private collectors who have incredible assortment of objects that are not seen as widely because they're in private hands. And there's stuff that I don't even know what's out there. And that was the challenge for me, is how do you find something if you don't know what's out there? So I had to kind of work through the process a couple different ways.
So how long did it take you to put this all together?
Well, it's actually a pretty quick timeline. I proposed the idea for the book, and we decided to try to get it out as quickly as possible, mostly because we thought it was a great idea and we were worried that somebody else was going to beat us to it. So it was probably about 6 months of research and writing, pulling the text and the images together and sending that along to the publisher to work through the final stages that way.
Now, how many objects did you actually have to go through before you said, I'm sure you just didn't do 1 to 100 and stop there. You must have done much more due diligence. So how many objects did you have to go through before you settled on this final 100?
Oh, that's a tough question. I mean, probably a few hundred in all. Again, just writing to the Hall of Fame and saying, what do you have for Babe Ruth? And I tried to narrow it down in these. If I knew the kinds of stories I wanted to tell, I would try to focus the search. But there were a lot of great objects that, couldn't make the cut. Either, I chose a different object to tell the particular story, or there were just some players or moments or stories that maybe were the 101st or 102nd greatest and ended up on the cutting room floor. But there would have been, it's probably enough out there to do another 100 if I put the time in and really dug a little bit deeper.
No, there's your next book, History of 104 Objects.
Right.
Now, this continues. You put out a lot of really good books on the game. They're handsome, very well illustrated. Would you consider this a coffee table book?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. It's got a lot of photography, and it's supposed to be an attractive package. It's almost 500 pages, so there's a lot in here. And I was really gearing the coverage to people who definitely have a strong interest in the sport and the history of the sport. But it's not necessarily for the hardcore, saber scholars of the game of baseball. I wanted to really present an overview that's going to appeal to a lot of people. So there are going to be some stories in here that people know, and players, again, know about Ted Williams and Joe DiMaggio's hitting streak and all those. But again, some lesser known gems that would appeal even to baseball fans who already have a library full of books on their shelves.
Now, is there an industry accepted definition of exactly what entails a coffee table book?
Not really. It's kind of a loose term.
Illustration content.
The size and package. Kind of what the market is that, when we're putting the book together, what are we thinking about? Other than coffee table book, another way that I like to think about it is gift book. It's the kind of book that you maybe will buy for somebody else, or you are going to leave out on your coffee table because it's kind of a display item, and it's the kind of thing someone sits down on your couch and just starts flipping through the book and sees a lot of interesting images and tidbits that will draw them in.
So it's not necessarily the thing you read cover to cover in one sitting.
No, I don't. It's very much structured in this book where you could jump in at any point and get the history of the particular player or that particular era that's of interest to you, and then jump back and learn about an earlier story that you may not be as familiar with. So it's very much you can jump in at any point, and each object, each story is, a few pages with a couple of images, so it's really digestible in that way.
So this is almost like putting a puzzle together, finding the pictures, writing the words. Which do you find more enjoyable, doing the research or doing the writing?
I think they're, for this particular book, because it was kind of a different approach, a different kind of history than I've gotten into before, that goose chase, that treasure hunt to find the images and the objects that were going to allow me to tell the story was a lot of fun. And then once I dig into the writing, you know, researching the player's history or the history of a team or the rules of the game, all this stuff, to me as a baseball fan, I'm always finding something new and exciting that I'd either not known before or had forgotten and just wanted to bring back and communicate in a different way. So for this book, I think the photo search and the research was exciting because it was different than some of the stuff I had done before.
Are there one or a couple of items in here that are your particular favorites?
There are, definitely. One of my favorites, and it's definitely an odd one, is the very first object in the book. And the book is organized chronologically to try to give that sense of the evolution of the game. And the very first object is an image from a medieval manuscript from 1300 that shows two young boys playing a game that looks very much like baseball. One of them swinging a bat, the other one is tossing a ball. And that sort of got me into the whole story of, well, where did baseball begin? And that's always been an ongoing debate and discussion. And the kind of point I tried to make is, well, there were earlier versions of the sport that were very reminiscent of baseball going back hundreds of years, and you can't necessarily pick a single moment that identifies the birth of baseball. So that was kind of a fun one to include. Another one, just more from a personal standpoint, was the Reggie candy bar from 1978 when Reggie Jackson came to New York. You know, I grew up in New York and was going to Yankee games when I was a kid back in 1978, and I remember those candy bars, and it was just kind of represented to me that team and kind of the superstar attitude and atmosphere that Reggie Jackson brought when he came to the Yankees.
I'm waiting for them to come out with the Harvey bar. You know, we recreated from a League of Their Own for the Mets' Matt Harvey. I'm amazed that there must be some copyright issues with that, because I imagine some marketing expert would have thought of that already.
Yeah, I'm sure they're thinking about it.
Now, you mentioned finding objects for prominent players like Ruth and Cobb and Jackson, but how did you ever find that item from 1300?
It's actually it was in a book by a guy named Robert Henderson, who had written kind of the history of the origin of baseball, and he mentions it, and I tracked it down, and it was in a art museum in Baltimore. It's in their collection, and so I contacted them and got an image of that 14th century illustration. So there's a little bit of a wild goose chase on some of these, and as soon as I saw that, actually I saw that illustration years ago, and I guess filed it away in the back of my mind that when I started to do this book, I knew I wanted to track it down.
I want to talk about some of your earlier work for just a second. You put out a book about the World Series in 2001. You put together Baseball Yesterday and Today, which is, if I recall, a collection of photographs basically over the history of the game.
Right.
And the one bothers isn't the right word, but Take Me Out to the Ballpark, which is a collection of information and photos about the ballpark. And the thing that I have to say irks me a little bit is it won't fit on the damn bookshelf.
Right. That's definitely what we would call a coffee table book, in part because it's hard to fit it on the shelf. It's a large page size, but we also did it in a curved shape to mimic the baseball diamond and the ball field shape. That's a book that I first did in about 2000, and we've done, I don't even know, 5 or 6 updates, just because new ballparks would come along over the last 15 years, and we wanted to include these new parks in each new edition of the book. So that book has been a great success and a lot of fun to keep going with and update and, you know, celebrate each new one that comes along.
But I'm just curious. I mean, it's obviously the shape of the book is so unusual. How do you even produce something like that?
Well, the printers did a great job of everything is cut specifically to shape the boards of the cover as well as the pages, and then they bind it together. And you can do all sorts of creative things with books these days, and the printers are pretty creative.
Are you working on anything now?
We are talking about doing another revision of that book kind of reformatting it and giving it a whole new fresh look. There haven't been too many new ballparks since it came out, but I think we want to go back and maybe include some older, lesser-known stadiums that aren't as widely known. But that's about it. And I'm an editor at another publishing company, and I've been able to work on a couple of baseball books with other authors, a book on the St. Paul Saints, the local team here in Minnesota that's owned by Mike Vec, who's Bill Vec's son, and also Bill Murray is one of the owners of the team. So there's some interesting projects coming along here.
Very good. We've been talking with Josh Leventhal, author of A History of Baseball in 100 Objects, published by Black Dog and Leventhal. Josh, thanks very much for talking with us today.
Thanks very much for having me on. It was great.
And that was our conversation with Josh Leventhal. Thanks for listening. Tune in again next time when our guest will be Robert Fitz, author of the new biography, Mashi, The Unfulfilled Baseball Dreams of Masanori Murakami, the first Japanese major leaguer. And remember, for the latest news, reviews, previews, and interviews on the national pastime, visit Ron Kaplan's BaseballBookshelf.com and drop us a line at ronkaplansbaseballbookshelf@gmail.com. Thanks, everybody. See you next time.
Seen Matty pitching that fader so grand, he'd have said, "Boys, I'm glad I discovered this land."